This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 233 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode is part of our Drums of Autumn read-along. And to find out more and how to participate, visit outlanderpod.com/DOA.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we will be discussing Chapter 8, entitled Man of Worth.
Lorraine B. writes, in this chapter, we learn about how hot, slow, and dangerous travel is up Cape Fear. There are alligators, venomous snakes, and pirates. Pirates, as the title of the third part of this book, sounded ominous and made me wonder why they would be meeting them on a river. I think most of us think pirates think of the ones we encountered in Voyager. Time and again, Diana surprises me.
Crunchy!
Just a little bit. So Jamie and Claire and the gang are finally on their way to Cross Creek via the river. They have the money from the sale of the ruby and didn't have to sell their horses. Duncan had gone ahead with the wagon over land to meet them, and Myers was with him. So the hernia is not out of the story just yet, perhaps. So we may get more hernia goodness. Seems like we
that
got...
That particular storyline has not come to a head. To a head yet. A head. A ball.
Well, as some of you have told us, because I'm... Here's the thing. It's like they say if you write your congressman or write your person of, your government, they really listen to letters because someone... Number one, someone obviously cares about it because they're taking the time to do a letter. Second of all... Not everybody does that. So a letter represents so many more people than just the one who sent the letter. All that to say, we heard from a number of you via email, via social media, that you guys were just, as before has happened, were tickled with our hernia talk. And so we were too. I mean, I think there was a pretty much, I think there were a lot of laughs on both sides last week. So thank you guys. And we love to hear that. So if there's something you really appreciate or really that makes you laugh, please let us know because it makes us know that we are continuing in the right direction.
And if it was purely ball talk, you like, it will come up again. I feel like there are more balls in our future, you guys.
The boat they're on, the Sally Ann, at first I'm thinking of Mark Twain and riverboats, but Diana describes it for us, quote, square-beamed, long, low-sided, and blunt-prowed. She boasted a tiny cabin that measured roughly 6 feet square, leaving a scant 2 feet on either side for passage, and a somewhat greater area of deck, fore and aft, and, quote, with a small sail mounted on a mast and boom above the cabin, the Sally Ann looked from a distance like a crab on a shingle, waving a flag of truce, unquote. Jamie hates boats, period. In an effort to distract him from potential nausea, Claire asks him about his aunt Jocasta. He hadn't seen her since he was 2, he says. She keeps trying to distract him as he is concerned about their boat hitting another raft.
Now, did he really see her when he was 2? I have no memories of being 2.
I don't think it was a memory of seeing her in front of his eyeballs. I think it was a memory of what he had been told had happened at certain years. Or he knew, for example, if there was a certain gathering, who knows, if there was a certain thing that happened in a certain year and he knew at that year he was 2 years old, but he knew Jocasta still lived at Leah, for example, then presumably he would have seen her. So he may never, ever have, you know, recognition of her or even know what she looks like. Because, 2 is a little bit young. Jocasta had been married a few times. She had married John Cameron and then Black Hugh Cameron and then Hector Moore Cameron, who had escaped Culloden unwounded, headed home, packed up his wife, servant, and the things he could carry, and fled to Edinburgh, then by ship to North Carolina. There he purchased a large tract of land, cleared the forest, built a house with a sawmill, bought slaves to work the place, and planted tobacco and indigo, and then died at age 73. So what's not in here, which, I mean, I don't, it's not a spoiler to say that these people existed, because unfortunately they died rather young, so they didn't really contribute to the story. But that's not all that happened. I'm not going to give any details, but that's not all that happened with, I'll just say this. Jocasta had children. And in that little blurb we get from Diana, there's no mention of kids, but they had kids. And yes, the kids were part of the flight in some way. But that comes later on. So that's not a spoiler. But I just thought it was odd that she left out the kids. But the focus, I guess, is on him and not – and just how they got to the New World. And yeah, I'm not – because anything else, I'm not going to spoil that. So her name is Jocasta Mackenzie Cameron Cameron Cameron. And she's now mistress of River Run.
I love the fact that she just kept marrying Camerons. I mean, it wasn't like brothers, she's like, but then it was like cousins, but still it was like, you know, I think I did well the first time. I'm going to stick with what I know. And the Camerons are pretty solid. So,
or she just didn't want to like get new monogrammed towels.
That would be very Scottish of her, because they are very thrifty.
That's true.
Very thrifty.
Megan P. writes, I am glad that Jamie isn't getting sick like he has in the past on boats. I feel like most couples at Jamie and Claire's age have a couple of grandchildren and a quiet little life carved out for themselves somewhere. As dreamy as these two are together, they sure have a chaotic existence. They truly never have a dull moment. That is true. Jopi writes, Hector Cameron played the game of rebellion well, it seems, outrunning the Redcoats with money enough to set up in the colonies. River Run, his new estate in this new version of Scottish community. Hector's story has all the hallmarks of a heroic, romantic epic, narrow escape and success that I should find admirable, but it's never had that for me. Many others escape with their lives after Culloden. Perhaps it's that he did it with his wife, a servant, and money, or it's just simply that Hector got away and my Jamie didn't. His greater sacrifice seemingly less rewarded. However, River Run is where there is family, and after so long adrift, the strong tide taking them up the river takes them toward possibility and connection. Now, Fergus mentions, we're like, oh, that's right, Fergus is here. Hi, Fergie.
Don't call him Fergie. That's gross.
It's done.
That makes me think of the Black Eyed Peas.
Oh, no. Fergus mentions that Jamie had told him a man could claim 50 acres so long as he built a house and works the land for 10 years. We're reminded that Marsali stayed in Jamaica to have their first child, and he already has plans for the baby's name. If it's a boy, it's Germaine James Ian Aloysius Fraser. If it's a girl, Genevieve Claire. So real quick, this I don't like, dear commenters, it is not because Summer is like, Summer never, well, she can see it in the email, but Summer doesn't put all the stuff together. So Summer, it's never Summer's fault if something is left out. So when listeners submit their stuff, we get it. And then we, you know, I thread it throughout. I do all my notes first and then I thread it throughout so that the comments don't have a huge chunk at the end. Now we may have a huge chunk at the end, but they're all properly situated there. I like to have things sprinkled throughout. So number one, you don't have only just us talking about what we think. You have other people's opinions, but also, so it makes sense. And I don't have to get to the end of the chapter and we're like, oh, when so-and-so did that, you're like, wait, huh? So that's why we do it. But there are two guidelines that I have for placing the listener comments. Number one is repetition. If we have three or four people and say two out of the four, if it's just one person, there's no problem. But if it's two, then I will not include double the thing. I will do my best to include other stuff that might not have been included, because I want to make sure that that person gets a fair shake because they took the time to do the work and send us their thoughts. And that's, we respect that so much. So we want to include everything we possibly can. However, for brevity, because you know we're not that short. Number one, I'm long-winded. Number two, our episodes are not hop, skip, and a jump, quickie dicky.
That's not a thing.
It is now. Stop.
Dickie.
So you see, when she interrupts me, it takes me even longer. It's kind of a joke, but it's not. It's for real. So number one, repetition. I do my best to not have repeating. Now, if I made the comment in my notes, then no one gets in but me. Not because it's my show or our show, but because I take my notes first. I do not look at comments. Number two. So I try to avoid repetition. Number two. There's only two, Ginger. Uh-huh. Come on. Number two, I do my best. And this is hard because I know we all love the show. But, and don't get me wrong, something may come out of me, something may come out of Summer, and I still do my best to edit that out. If we say something like, besides the fact that we might jinx it, that it won't happen, right? If you're talking about, oh, I can't wait to see this in the book. Well, okay, we know how that goes. If you're a longtime listener, you'll know how that goes. So we try to avoid that, number one. But if a listener or a contributor gives us other comments and says something like, oh, I can't wait to see this. Or I wonder if, you know, like someone said, I can't wait to see, I forget the actress's name, so-and-so as Aunt Jocasta. She's going to be amazing. Da, da, da. No, I don't think Summer would disagree. I definitely don't disagree. It's not a matter of agreeing or disagreeing. But just so you guys know, it's not a personal thing. I keep out repetition and I keep out as much as possible, obviously spoilers, anything getting ahead of this chapter, I leave out. But I leave out pretty much every mention of the series because this is a read along. Whereas when we talk about the series, there's an absolute reason, not to compare it page for page, but there's an absolute reason, or it makes perfect sense to bring up the book, right, Sam? Because we're saying, oh, I forgot that scene, or, oh, you know, I actually like it better here on the adaptation than in Dragonfly and Amber or whatever book. But since there is nothing in existence yet, even though they're filming, I don't want a lot of show talk in our talk about the chapter, which is 100% book. So Summer is like champing at the bit. I'm sorry, Sam, what's up?
I mean, you could have just said, I like to
just want to go on
by not being repetitive.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Okay,
do you know what I like to do?
Streamline things.
I like to listen to Ginger talk for 30 minutes and then sum it up with four words. That's what I like to do.
Okay. So Megan P says, oh, sorry. Okay. This is why I said this whole thing.
That's the problem. You talk around
even though I just
20 minutes and forget why.
I know. I'm not talking around it. I'm looking at the comments. I know exactly why I said it. So the reason I want, number one, to give explanation, but also to say that even though I just said what I said, I'm going to break my own rule for just a half a second. I'm not talking about the production or what I hope or what I don't hope. I have to say, though, it's going to be interesting, and it doesn't affect the storyline. But wasn't it interesting that even though we didn't see her, we weren't told, number one, at the end of season three, we don't know if they're going to have Marsali be pregnant, right?
Well, they didn't leave her. They did not leave her in Jamaica.
That's, well, if she was left, which she wasn't, it wasn't for the sake of pregnancy because we didn't know yet. It was too close of a time. So, yeah, I just thought it was interesting.
Considering the way they're playing Marsali, I can't imagine them having her fall pregnant that quickly.
Really? Because she was all over her husband.
She was all over her husband, but she was also like, I don't want to do this right now. They were playing her like very, very Margaret Sanger.
But so did Book Marsali.
I know, but they were playing her real Margaret Sanger.
Okay. So we shall see. It would be sad if we didn't get that little, what's his dude's? The little Germaine or Genevieve. Megan P. writes, so Fergus has left Marsali in Jamaica with friends, and I know he has her safely. He has her safety and well-being in mind, but I know it must have been hard for him to leave her. His focus is on making sure he has a safe place for them to start their family, which I think is sweet. I also love his loyalty to Milor and Milady that shows so often. It really shows how Fergus has been shaped and molded through the years from the pickpocket that was born in a whorehouse to the man he has become through not only Jamie and Claire's influence, but Jenny and Ian's as well. Great parents he had to learn from, for sure. I think it is so special that he wants to honor both sets of his parents in the naming of his first child. I wonder how Marsali feels about including Claire in this great honor. Marsali and Claire have a bit of an understanding now for sure, but surely not best friends by any means. Plus, I would imagine that she might name the child before Fergus can go back to her. But maybe they discussed this before he left. Joe B. writes, Fergus is both romantically French and pragmatically Scottish. He could be thrilled by the prospect of farming 50 acres, and although years at Lallybroch must have given him some experience, it's a significant undertaking. While seemingly quite content to leave Marsali in Jamaica to the woman's work of childbirth, whilst this makes me bristle as a woman of my time, it's understandable that Fergus wants to make that common distinction. Women often reinforcing that view at the time. Although I've wondered why Marsali stayed in Jamaica if she didn't balk at hand fasting and jumping a ship to the other side of the world to be with Fergus, it seems odd that she stayed away given she would be 10 to 12 weeks pregnant. Also, the choice of baby names suddenly made more sense to me this read-through. Jamaine always seemed like an outlier. But if all the other names are family or saints, why choose a first name that seemingly doesn't? Or does it? Or Genevieve. Just got to throw that in there. Jamaine or Genevieve.
Is that not Genevieve?
Well, yeah, but it's French is Genevieve.
Okay. Because every time you say that, I'm like, that's not what the book says. Because I'm looking at it. I was like, it says Genevieve.
That's how French is, but it's pronounced in French, Genevieve. We encounter a unique method of execution. There was a man, a dead man, chained to a pine stake that had been driven into the mud of the bank. The boat's captain, Captain Freeman, said, pirate. They're either taken to Charleston to be hanged. They'll stake them at low tide and let the river have them. When the tide comes in, they drown. And they see their first alligator at about this point. And there's some nasty shenanigans that the alligator's likely doing under the water, and the body kind of moves and blah, blurg. Jamie has a book about the natural history of North Carolina given to him by Governor Tryon. So he's kind of finding the names of these animals and, of course, later possums and all that. Fergus shares a tale Dr. Stan had shared with him about hunters in Egypt copulating with crocodiles. Blech.
You know what I'm not going to Google tonight?
Copulating with crocodiles?
Nope. I refuse to be on that FBI watch list.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. Lorraine B. writes, and what would a Diana Gabaldon book be without a vivid tidbit that I cannot unsee? Oh, that's a rhyme, Lorraine. Fergus's recounting of a tale told by Stan about Egyptian men taking advantage of female alligators. Blurg. And I think probably the worst part, even though the worst part is you know what it is, when Diana writes something along the lines of sharing the reptilian embrace.
Verb.
What? What?
Too far, Diana. Too far.
Exactly. That poor alligator... She's being raped. That's disgusting. And bestiality. And gross. Which is also the same as disgusting. The tide rises. They're moving much more quickly on their way. Now, for the next 5 or 6 hours, they'll be able to ride the surge. Jamie brings out a present for Claire. It was a doctor's box. And as she goes through it, she sees probably one of the most important instruments she'll have, at least for the next 2 or 3 books, a microscope. It was had been property of one Dr. Daniel Rawlings, who had disappeared, and it had been about a year or so since he'd left. Another hint to Jamie as the sun, quote, he smiled then in return. The sun blazed low, a brilliant orange ball glimpsed briefly through dark treetops, unquote. The box, Jamie says, had been at the goldsmith shop, and he just asked about it when he was there. He had gone in to actually get her a little bauble or some kind of trinket. And the reason? It was their 24th anniversary to the day.
Dude, he remembers everything. Even in the – I saw was it Laugh Outlander? I don't know. I should have looked it up before I referenced it. But somebody was saying – it was saying something about him being – a real man, real men are in the middle of a war and still can count your woman, your wife's menstruation. Yeah.
Monthly.
Schedule.
Oh, gosh.
And remembers anniversaries. Add that to the list.
Megan P. writes, be still my heart. Jamie's gift of a doctor/surgeon kit was so thoughtful. Her excitement was so cute. Her comment about Leary, damn her eyes, Mackenzie Fraser, was hilarious. My surprise that the gift was in memoriam of their wedding anniversary was just the cherry on top of it all. Usually when you say in memoriam,
generally,
someone's dead.
Or we wish.
I'll leave I'll leave that out. Him remembering after so many years apart when she didn't remember herself just further establishes his King of Men status, and it gave me goosies when I read it. Huh? I like that, Megan. Goosies? I'm going to have to use that. It gave me goosies. Yeah. That was,
I don't like how you just said like that. It. No. Yeah. Like
goosies.
Yeah. Like that.
Oh. Summer. Joby writes, how much do I love Jamie giving Claire a medicine chest for a wedding anniversary present? And although it's been 24 years since they got married, sadly, they've only had one wedding anniversary together before. Their second in June 1745. The first in 1744 was in the time of separation after they lost Faith. This chest is far more romantic than jewelry in its way. It's a sign of Jamie's understanding of who Claire is, even after so long apart, and of his support and admiration for her role as a doctor. How could you regret marrying a man like that?
I don't know. In that time period, some sort of a confectionery might have been nice as well, considering the scarcity of them.
Yeah, no kidding. They tied up the riverboat raft thingy for the night, and they ate dinner on shore, but they slept back on the boat. Jamie and Claire wake before dawn and have almost nookie. That day, Claire is looking through the casebook and the box while Jamie and Young Ian are waxing linguistic, literally. Jamie and Young Ian are working on quotes from Plautus's Amphitryon. And I'm not going to, even though I can bastardize it. Actually, my Latin, I don't speak Latin. I'm not good at Latin, but I can pronounce it because.
I can speak pig Latin.
Yes, you can. So basically, they were working on reciting some quotes from Plautus's Amphitryon. I'm not going to pronounce the Latin, but I will read one of the brief translations. This is from Wikipedia. We'll include the link in the show notes. Valor's best reward, 'tis valor that surpasses all things else. Our liberty.
Not the same thing. I know what you were thinking about, you nerd.
What? Oh, shut up. Our liberty, our safety, life, estate, our parents, children, country are by this preserved, protected. Valor everything comprises in itself, and every good awaits the man who is possessed of valor. And that was translated by Thornton. But Jamie is just not having it with Young Ian. Diana flat out says, Young Ian, or Claire does, that Young Ian has gifts, but languages is not one of his gifts like it is for Jamie. So it's hard, and I think Jamie kind of realizes that, but I think he's not upset that Young Ian is not as gifted as him. I think he's upset that because Ian.
Wow.
Good grief. Ian.
It could be Ian.
Ian.
like Ian Ziering.
Ian doesn't seem to care. He's not pissy about it. He's just like, oh okay, got. And Jamie's like, really? You know, Jamie wants him to care more, at least. He can make all the mistakes in the world. If he cared, Jamie would be a lot less bothered. Megan P. writes, I wish that languages were considered more vital and important in American education today. It is good that Jamie is taking the time to teach Ian. A man that considers education just as important as fighting skills was probably a rarity during this time frame in history. Okay, so we're reminded that Ian Sr. had been in France fighting at the age of 15. Up through the age of 22 when he lost his leg. Once Jamie was outlawed, he went to France as well. And he'd fought with Ian Sr. under one Fergus Mac Lewis, if I'm not mistaken, from where Fergus, our Fergus, has his name. Whereas young Jamie had Lallybroch, and Michael worked with their cousin Jared in Paris, his parents had wanted young Ian to be a man of learning, a man of worth. Jamie tells him, quote, you'll amount to something for your mother's sake if it kills us both, unquote. Megan P. writes, so, dunya wasal or washal is a Gaelic expression that they get the title of this chapter from, as it means man of worth. I love the idea of the Scottish teaching their sons to be men of worth and everything that means to their culture. I think more of this is needed in current times with young men. Jamie is always such a man's man, but he never seems to lose that hint of boyish charm, which I think is shown very well at the end of the chapter with that cheeky poem. Great chapter. Lorraine B. writes, I love how Diana gives us information about Jocasta's background. We see poor Jamie fighting to overcome both his seasickness and his urge to take control of their boat as another bears down on them. No ordinary recounting effects here. And this segues into a beautiful, humorous, and somewhat intimate moment offset by young Ian's timing. It's this kind of storytelling that keeps me coming back for more. Joby writes, Jamie's loco parentis role with Ian is causing an amusing but frustrating aspect of their relationship. Ian, although clever and capable, isn't the scholar Jamie is. Ian perhaps rightly asserts that Greek and Latin won't be that useful in the backcountry, but what the struggle between uncle and nephew is based on is the struggle to find a valued place in the world, a world that now presents options for Ian that his brothers don't have. Jamie needs him to take this seriously if he's to be a man of worth he's meant to be. Yet Claire admits to only a basic Latin, Jamie gives up this part of educating Ian, instead showing off for Claire his grasp of language. Ironically, Jamie, our ultimate man of worth, won't row with his shirt off. As always, join us to continue the conversation in our Facebook community. You can find us at outlanderpod.com/group.
And again, if you are interested in joining us for our read-along and being a contributor, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/DOA.
If you love our show and are entertained by it, please visit our Patreon page and consider supporting us. Every bit helps cover our costs, be it hosting, recording, equipment, etc. There are also a number of free ways to help support our show. The most important way you can help us out is to spread the word. Tell your friends and family about the Outlander podcast. And with that, thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook. Facebook.com/OutlanderPod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at OutlanderPod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlanderPod.